There's a lot of great things happening at Tennessee Athletics.
I believe this city is going to be upside down tonight.
Season-long party continues at Rocky Top.
Welcome back, y'all, to another episode of the Everything Orange podcast. Today, our guest is a Lady Vol for Life who was a Title IX trailblazer for female athletes at the University of Tennessee and across the country. Back in 1964, she was the first female golfer at UT, and at that time was the first and only woman to play on a UT men's varsity team and the first to hold an athletic scholarship. Additionally, she has been the university's first lady in many other capacities. She was the first recipient of a Neyland Scholarship, the first woman ever appointed to a UT Board of Trustees at the age of 26, and became the first woman ever to deliver a commencement speech at Tennessee. And on top of all of that, come tomorrow, she will be inducted into the Tennessee Athletics 2024 Hall of Fame. So please welcome to the Everything Orange podcast, Anne Baker Furrow. Anne Baker Furrow, thank you so much for joining me on the Everything Orange podcast today.
Thank you, Sarah. It's my honor to be here.
We are truly honored to have you. Your story and your legacy runs so deep here at Tennessee, and there's so many exciting things coming up for you in the near future, which is just a perfect storm as to why we brought you on.
Thank you.
Also, your story just needs to be told, and people need to understand all of the things that you went through. So let's go back to the beginning, because you grew up in Maryville, Tennessee.
Maryville, Tennessee.
Just right down the road from us here in Knoxville. What do you remember specifically about, you know, just sports in general back then, but also female sports, and what were you seeing when it came to women competing athletically in sports?
Well, we did not have, I played basketball also,
okay.
but they had just put it back in when I was in the eighth grade. They had just put women's basketball back in to the Maryville City Schools.
Wow.
And so that was something I was able to play, but I started playing golf when I was nine and really started traveling all over the country. And most of the time, though, I played with women. You know,
okay.
A lot of girls would say, oh, I just played junior tournaments. We didn't have junior girls tournaments.
Mm.
So if I hadn't had so many wonderful women that welcomed me and encouraged me and mentored me, it would have been hard. But I was very fortunate.
Yes.
And so I started playing golf.
So in saying that, was it normal for you to be a girl playing sports? Did you not feel out of place or like it wasn't socially acceptable back then? Was it pretty normalized for you because of the community of young girls in sports that where you were?
There weren't that many. I grew up in a neighborhood of boys.
Okay.
So I competed morning till night, late night, in everything from tiddlywinks, croquet, basketball, football, baseball, tennis.
Wow.
Everything. And the boys were mostly older than I was. So and they gave me no advantage, you
uh-huh.
know, which
mm-hmm.
I thought was not fair. So I learned how to compete, and I'm a competitive person. I've always enjoyed competition. There was not a lot of opportunity. Girls now have no idea what mm-hmm. opportunities are now. There were not that many back then. I knew one girl golfer at the club where I played, and
okay.
that encouraged me. That helped me mm-hmm. some. Then she moved away. But there was very, very little opportunity for girl athletes. Now, you could play basketball,
mm-hmm.
And certainly no scholarships,
mm-hmm.
no furthering your education mm-hmm. through a scholarship.
Mm-hmm. Athletically, right, at the next level.
Yeah.
Golf in particular, you mentioned that you started at a young age. What got you into golf, and how did you find a love for it?
Well, my dad was a weekend golfer, not very good, in the mid-90s, and the story is that when the boys went off to play Little League Baseball, which I could not play, with them. I
okay.
could play with them. I could
sure.
compete with them.
Absolutely.
But, they
you weren't allowed.
I was not allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I was not allowed to play on the men's golf team in high school. We petitioned the TSSAA to ask me to play on it, and I was not allowed to play on
wow.
it.
Wow.
Yeah. But anyway, when I couldn't go play baseball, I started pulling my father's golf cart around and picked up the game. He got me a little sawed-off club. I remember that. And by 10, I won the women's club tournament,
oh.
and 11, I was playing in the women's state tournaments.
So pretty much for all of your career before you got to college, were you playing solo? Because like you mentioned, there wasn't anything offered at the high school level for you to be a part of a team.
Oh, yeah. I was just on my own playing.
And how did that make you feel? What were your thoughts on that?
I knew nothing different.
Okay.
I mean, it didn't make me feel less than anything. Mm-hmm. I was competing nationally from really age 12 on.
Okay.
So I traveled around and played against girls in tournaments. And it never even crossed my mind mm-hmm. that women weren't getting as much opportunity as they do now. Mm-hmm.
So when you were looking at college and your next opportunity academically, was there ever a thought that crossed your mind where you said, I want to go continue my golf career while I'm also at school? Was that an option for you at the time?
Well, I ended up being the number one junior golfer in the country. So wouldn't you think there would be numerous
people knocking at your door?
Knocking at my door.
Absolutely.
But there really weren't. There was Arizona State had, I don't know if you ever heard of Joanne Carner, mm-hmm. Big Mama,
okay.
became a pro and Hall of Famer and all. She was on a music scholarship or, academic scholarship to Arizona State. That Judy Eller Street went to Miami and had to kind of create some sort of scholarship for her to go. You just didn't have nobody. I mean, I was the number one junior.
Yes.
And had so little opportunity until got a call one day.
Okay. Please tell me more.
Okay. I've always said I've been so blessed. My life has been so blessed and such wonderful things have happened to me. And I got a call one day. I was not looking at UT at all. Hmm. And Bowden Wyatt, who was the acting athletic director, called and said, Ann, we would like to meet with you at Dean Hill Country Club. Would you meet us there? And I said, sure. And the SEC in 1962, I believe, passed a rule that women could play varsity men's sports. No contact, but varsity men's sports. Hmm. And so that meant golf was available. Well, I happened to be the number one junior in the country.
Yes.
And I happened to live in Maryville, Tennessee. And the press in Knoxville had always treated me so well. Mm-hmm. I mean, Red Bells, Tom Seiler, Ben Bird were so good to me. Mm-hmm. And so people in Knoxville knew who I was. Mm-hmm. And anyway, went to Dean Hill, and the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, offered me a full athletic scholarship, 4 years, to play on the men's golf team. And so, gee whiz. And
right.
I'd had a situation that had happened right before that. My mother died going into my senior year of high school. Mm. So this gave me a wonderful opportunity to stay here. Closer to home with my father.
Right.
And my sister was already in Memphis. Her husband was in dental school. And so it was just a wonderful thing.
Yes.
It all came together.
A perfect storm in terms of timing for you
right.
and what made sense for you the most at that time. And so for you, during that brief period when the SEC did allow women to play on the men's varsity team, how did they react to you being on the golf course with them? Was it normal for them? Were
yes.
they welcoming to you?
Yes, very welcoming.
Okay.
Great guys. I had to play on the freshman team first. I was like the third person on the freshman team.
Okay.
Sonny Kyle and Sonny Vandegrift and anyway, Ted mm-hmm. Arsenal, great guys, and they treated me well. And then the guys that were a little bit older, Denny Peters and all, were really very welcoming. The only time that it was really kind of fun was nobody wanted to lose to me. Can you imagine how they would be harassed mm-hmm. by their teammates and everybody else? So I took great pleasure in beating. So, and I won a few matches. I won.
As yeah. you should. Yeah. And asking that same question, similarly, how was the competition in terms of the other teams, your competitors, when they saw that there was a female on the men's team?
Well, back then you would only play one school at a time. Like, we went to Georgia.
Okay.
And so you played against their fourth player, or fifth player, seventh player, mm-hmm. sixth player, however many they had. It's not like it is now, where
okay.
you, which I had to learn a lot when I started the women's golf team. I had to learn a whole lot. But I don't know, one of the guys at Georgia that I played, and he barely beat me, and he was a very good golfer from Memphis. I can't remember his name right now, but he's a great guy, and we stayed in contact and all like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I really had absolutely nothing negative happen in any of it.
Wonderful.
I was very supported.
Yes. And what do you remember about the athletic department during the time you were at Tennessee? Because, you know, there wasn't a women's lady ball program dedicated for athletics. So what do you remember about that time? And in that same vein, did you feel supported by our athletic department, being that you were a woman on the men's team?
Oh, I felt very supported, as much as they could. You know, women just didn't compete. They were in intramural sports. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how you had to play. My friends that were good basketball players or good tennis players were doing it through intramurals or whatever, or through the phys ed department.
Right.
They weren't competing like against other schools. Well, no, I think they did compete against other schools, but it was very low-key.
Right.
And you know, you'd get in a van and
exactly.
drive somewhere. And
there weren't the resources,
no,
the
nothing.
Equipment, the personnel, nothing like
no.
there is, obviously,
I can
now.
Tell you a little story.
Yes, please do.
We will get into, I'm sure, how the women's athletics department all got started. But and then I had a unique situation where we can talk about that mm-hmm. later, too. I was appointed to the Board of Trustees mm-hmm. When I was 26.
Yes.
And as a former athlete, when the Title IX thing did come around and start, I was looked at for opinions and thoughts, I guess. But I ran into a girl named Gloria Ray that I kind of knew. She was at the Tyson's tennis courts. And I said, hey, Gloria, who are you? She's, and I think she coached maybe the tennis, something here in the AIA or the intramural.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, I'm getting ready. I'm leaving. And she said, when you all get serious about women's athletics, you call me. Guess who our first women's AD was?
It was her.
It was Gloria Ray.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So how all that happened, I can tell you. But
yes, because she was ahead of the eight ball and was just, you know, when the time comes, you let me know because
yeah.
I'm ready and I'm willing to do the all and put in the hard work to get yeah. it where it needs to be. Yeah.
I was on the interview committee when we were setting up. It mm-hmm. took a while to, I mean, Title IX came in 72.
Yes.
We really did not get our act together until about 77.
Okay.
And anyway, we were hunting an AD, and I was on the interview committee, and I can tell you exactly where I was sitting, and Gloria was one of the candidates. Mm-hmm. And she said, my blood runs orange. And I said, that's the one we want.
And
yeah. she was an excellent AD.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, she really was. And then that's when we were fortunate enough to get Joan Cronin.
Yes, which we will get to because she was immensely influential in getting the women's program where it is today. Going back to you, though, in that first season that you played on Rocky Top, when you reflect back on how that moment played out, what do you think of?
Well, again, I really didn't create a path. I just happened to be given a very, very unique opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. I benefited from it. But then things really didn't turn around for women athletes until Title IX.
Right.
It's nothing... Title IX was a game changer.
Yes.
It's huge.
Okay, well, let's get into that because like you mentioned, we just had the 50th, you know, anniversary, which was amazing because even at the SEC Women's Basketball Tournament, I remember working and seeing all the women recognized from all the different schools across the SEC, and it was so powerful seeing them all stand and be recognized in one place at one time. What do you remember about when these conversations were starting to happen about the enactment of Title IX?
Well, I knew it was going to make a big difference in women's athletics. As I said, it took Tennessee, Knoxville, a few years to get our act together. Mm-hmm. We had committees, search committee, or we had a committee to study how did we want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You had a men's athletics department that was running through the president of the system, not of the chancellor, but of the system. Okay, do you want to put women's athletics in the same department with the men and they go through the president?
Mm-hmm.
Well, came down. What finally came down, which I thought was, and I was very much for, is to have separate athletic departments, a man's and a woman's. And the men still stayed with the president until just, I don't know when, they quit. They report to the chancellor now.
Okay. Yep.
But the women always reported to the chancellor.
Mm-hmm.
And we had our own AD. We called our own game. The name Lady Vol just became so widespread. At one point, I think it was the fifth most recognized name in athletics or collegiate sports.
Right.
But anyway, it took on a brand that was its own.
What challenges during that time did you face to get the women's athletics at the forefront of Tennessee athletics as a whole?
Well, the budget you had to figure out. I mean, and that was one the big, the location, it was on its own. Mm-hmm. The budget, Dr. Bowling did not want to take any money out of men's athletics at all.
Wow.
So we took the money out of the student activities fee.
Okay.
I think at one point, initially in those first years, we maybe had $1.2 million coming out of the student activities fee, or that's the most we got, I think. But the funding was very important, but the support was always there. And I'll say this, Dr. Bowling, Chancellor Reese, everyone loved the Lady Vols. Mm. You know, what's not to love when you're winning national titles?
Right.
And you have Pat Summitt, and the fan base was just fabulous. We just had an unbelievable ride back in those years.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was great.
You mentioned some of the first things that you did outside of college athletics. We have you named in our record books as the first lady of multiple different capacities on this campus. I'm going to list a few of them for those listening so that they know as well. You were the first recipient of a Neyland scholarship. You're the first woman ever appointed to the UT Board of Trustees, like you mentioned, at 26 years old, where you served for 18 years on the board. And you served as vice chair of the board as well, and it held a position on the executive committee of the board, served as chair of the academic affairs committee for 10 years, and became the first woman ever to deliver a commencement speech at UT. We can kind of hit all of those points because there were many that we talked about.
I told you I've had a blessed life.
Yes.
I really have. God has been good to me.
Yes. A lot of those rooms, there was a majority of men in them. How were you able to walk in confidently as a woman and be present in those spaces and not have any, you know, reason to shy away from those opportunities? Yeah.
Well, I think if you're an athlete and competitive, I was prepared. I think they respected me. Mm-hmm. I did not feel unrespected, even when I was young. It was funny when I got appointed to the board, they said, well, you know, it's going to be all those old men smoking cigars and all that. Well, guess who I sat next to all the time? You don't know who, Tom Elam. And Tom Elam was this big guy, bigger than life, especially in athletics.
Okay.
And he always smoked a cigar. And so that's who I sat next to all the time. Anyway, again, you know, I may be oblivious to somebody putting me down, but I never, ever felt less, and I think they respected me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, academically, I did fine. Most people don't know that I did receive, besides the athletic scholarship, I received the first Neyland academic scholarship.
Yes.
And I think it, or Neyland, whichever you say, Neyland. I think they say Neyland. But yeah, I was the first person to get that for 4 years. So I kind of made money coming to UT.
Right.
Kind of like they are now.
Exactly, in a different way, right?
That they're getting ready to.
Yes. For all those firsts for you, like you said, like it wasn't just athletics, it was also academic. I want to talk to you about in 1991 when the women's athletic department began adding golf as a sport for 92. You worked with Joan Cronin to establish and hire the first golf coach, Linda Franz. What do you remember about that process and being able to have a hand in bringing women's golf to Tennessee?
Well, I remember a whole lot. And one reason we hadn't added it before was I told Joan, I said, Joan, you know, being on the Board of Trustees, you're also of Chattanooga and Memphis, Martin and all.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw schools that had women's golf, but that consisted of you've got some volunteer in the community, a woman in the community, to get a van and go out and piddle-paddle and golf. And mm-hmm. I said, Joan, no, we're not going to do that. I mean, you wait till the time is right, and we'll add it, and I'll help. And so when our son went off to college in 89, I called up Joan. I said, all right, Joan, I'll give you a couple of years of my life, and we'll also endow the golf team.
Okay.
Because I read in golf, I didn't even know what. People think I play golf all the time. I really quit. My husband doesn't play golf.
Okay.
So after winning a couple of things for him after we got married, I did not touch a club for 9 years.
Wow.
So in the 90s, when we started the golf team, I had to learn all sorts of stuff because mm-hmm. I didn't know.
Right.
And I called my friend Bonnie Blackburn, who the golf clubhouse is the Blackburn for a
yes.
clubhouse. And Bonnie was like my mother. After my mother died, Bonnie became my, mm-hmm. she was like a grandmother to my children. And I called Bonnie. I said, okay, Bonnie, I volunteered to start the women's golf team. I don't know how to recruit. She said, I've saved all my golf weeks and golf worlds, I believe it was. And it has people listed how they're ranked and all. I got her old magazines,
wow.
Went through them, and that's how. And she went on the first recruiting trip with me.
Oh, wow.
It was great.
What
she
great
loved
memories.
The Lady Vols. They loved her, and she loved the Lady Vols. But we did raise $2 million.
Wow.
Took us a couple of years. But to endow the team, and I read about that, I think, in Golf Week, that Las Vegas University, is there a University of Las Vegas?
Yes, yeah. I believe so. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they had raised $1.5 million for their men's program, and I said, we can raise $2 million for our
yes,
women's program.
Absolutely.
And so we did. We
yes.
were very, very fortunate. And our starting out, Linda Front, I mean, there's so many, we could talk forever about all of that. And then we dream big. I mean, if you looked at our, and which I have copies of, I have what we used to recruit with, which was a big notebook that I created all this junk in it. But our goal, as I said, you've got to have goals.
Mm-hmm.
Our goal was within 5 years. And how I asked a guy that was playing in the men's tournament at Holston with the collegiates, and I said, well, in 5 years, what should we shoot for? And he said, oh, you might make the top 15. I said, okay. So we put as our goal for the team, and told all of our recruits our goals to be in the top 15 in the country in 3 years and the top 5 in 5 years.
Wow.
And we did it.
What do you know? You two did it.
Yes, we did it. Anyway, it was great. So, no, it was. I did give a lot of my life for a couple mm-hmm. of years and then became the volunteer coach, which meant nothing. Man, I got the outfits. And then after maybe 15 years, I quit doing that, mm-hmm. or 10 or so. But still involved and still care about them. But I'm
absolutely. I mean, you're still here around campus whenever we have Lady Vol Summit events and, you know, empowering women events. I mean, I always see your name around.
Well, and actually, when I leave here, I'm going to the first Lady Vol women golfers in the area, they're inviting out to the clubhouse.
Wow.
For games, fun,
yes.
and learn about the program.
Oh, that's amazing. So, I mean, so still, it never stops. And I feel like that's a theme that runs so true here at Tennessee, that it's not just the 4 years. You are a Lady Vol for life, and it runs through you forever and ever. There's no end point with it.
I hope that stays the case. You know they did eliminate the name for a few years. Yes.
So let's talk about it.
Oh, no. I don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
All right. We'll talk about it.
Okay.
That's fine.
It's up to you. We don't have to.
We can talk
but
about
I'm
it.
Just curious as to your thoughts and what it meant to then see it put back at the forefront and be a priority here.
Well, when we had that change of athletic directors, we also merged the departments. And that was okay. It was time. There was duplication. That was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But then when the decision to eliminate the name Lady Vol, I thought, do you understand what you're doing to how much love people have for that? And for the, we had that brand because we were separate. Again, 5 or 6 Division I schools in the whole country ever were separate and ran their own show.
Right.
And so we had that brand and recognition. And as you know, it kind of created an uproar,
mm-hmm.
and I was here when we raised the flag back out there.
Wow.
Yeah. And people just know the name Lady Vols.
Yes. And there's so much history to the name that I hope that when, you know, we get young women that come through the programs, whatever sport that they're at, that they truly understand what it means to be a Lady Vol, because it's so much more than the branding and the color and the logo, but the women that made it possible for them to be in the position they are today, they carry that on their back as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm so proud of, you see all the announcers on the basketball shows.
Yes.
So many are Lady Vols.
Yes.
And anyway, we just need to keep it up and do more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do lots more.
Yes. I also want to talk about the boulevard being named after you, because I pass it every day when I come to work. And it was officially dedicated in your name with the Sorority Village Center and the Sorority Village at UT on April 13th of 2013, with the traffic light now at the intersection of Neyland Drive and Ann Baker Furrow Boulevard. And I love that you were quoted saying, if you get stopped at the traffic light out here, please don't cuss me, but say a prayer for someone that you love.
Yeah.
Can you talk to me about what that meant?
Well, the light is long, as you know. And I know all of my friends that work downtown or go to school or going to UT get stopped by it. And, you know, it's long. I just wanted people to know, please don't, you know, cuss me. Just say a prayer. And I did say a prayer for me or someone you love.
Someone you love, yes.
And people come stop all the time and say, I prayed for you.
How amazing. Well, it's funny because there have been times when that light has caught me when I'm hurrying to work. And then after, when I was doing my research and I saw your quote, it totally made me think of it differently. And yeah. I do have a moment of reflection of like, okay, let me just put everything into perspective and slow my roll a little bit, which is just, I mean, I love it. I loved the quote. It was so great.
Well, thank you. One thing people don't realize too, I was really, really involved in sororities and heavily involved. And I had that opportunity. You could not do that now. Again, you could not do what I did. I joined a sorority right off the bat and, you know, was pledged president and blah, blah, and then ended up being president and all that junk. And it meant a lot to me. I love my sorority sisters, and it just gave you a different outlook. Well, I know now some, like Tess Darby, and some of them I've joined.
Yes.
I was an 80 Pie. Tess and them were 80 Pies.
Okay.
It broadened, especially after I couldn't play as much golf my junior and senior year because of the ruling. It was wonderful. And so it was appropriate for that, I guess, to be named for me.
Right. I'm learning so much about you where it's so much more than just the athletics for you and the academics and the social involvement on campus. I mean, you had your hand in just about everything Tennessee when you were here.
I did. I loved it. In fact, I called my roommate yesterday to wish her happy birthday. I had great roommates and we're still great friends. And anyway, so yeah, I really had a good time
here.
Yes. And I met my husband. And we're just 57 years.
I was going to ask how
this
long.
Week.
Wow, congratulations. That's amazing. What's the secret to a happy marriage?
Well, better marry somebody nice.
Yes, that's important.
Somebody nice and kind and caring, intelligent. It was important for me to marry somebody that had ambition, that you wanted to be successful. Sam wanted to, and he'd been successful when he was here. You're going to have ups and downs. Yeah. I can tell you that. There'll be some good days, bad days, but a lot more good days. But I think it needs to be a kind person. We've been very fortunate.
Well, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
We mentioned the Lady Vol brand and how worldwide it is. But for you, and how empowering is it to see your alma mater, which at one point, you know, didn't have a women's athletic program, to help trailblaze such a legacy that is now recognizable across the country and across the world?
Well, again, I think we're just very fortunate. The fact that we were separate, we could call our own shots. And we were going through the chancellor then. Dr. Howard Ahman was fabulous. And all of the Tennessee people really rallied around the Lady Vols. And again, you had Pat Summitt.
Yeah.
We had Terry Hull that won a national title. Anyway, we just had a grand ride. Joan and I have said many times, boy, we had a good ride.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people, our friends our age did. It was just a wonderful time. We're very fortunate.
There were a lot of firsts that you did while you were here at Tennessee, and trailblazing and paving the way for a lot of women to follow in your footsteps. But I know that the way that you look at it is you were the first, but you don't want to be the last.
Correct.
Can you just expand on that for me and how you hope to see, you know, those that follow after you?
The opportunities are there. I'm glad women are getting so many more opportunities, which I'd say it as I said it once already on the show. Girls and people have no idea what it was like back in my day, which is a long time ago,
right?
1963 to 1972, until Title IX came in, there was very little opportunity for women. They could play, but, you know, intramural-wise or something like that. AIAW was around then, which you know what that is.
And yes.
That, I think we became part of the NCAA in 78, something like that.
Okay.
But all those years before we were in the AIAW. I think Pat was runner-up four times in the AIAW national title.
Wow.
And didn't, I don't think, won a national title till we were part of NCAA.
For you, What does it mean to be able to carry the Lady Vol proudly on your chest and be a part of that legacy forever?
Well, again, I was a man Vol, so I was not a Lady Vol, but I've been heavily, heavily involved in the women's athletics program and success, I guess, a little bit. Yeah, I guess I was a Lady Vol golfer. What? I mean, a Lady Vol coach.
Right,
yeah,
there we go. Okay.
Yeah, okay, I was a Lady Vol. No, I've always been very proud of this university and the support that they gave women's athletics, and that we want to keep being successful. But it's a whole new ball game right now. Mm-hmm. We're going to need help from other people, too, mm-hmm. outside.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens.
Yes, absolutely. Any piece of I'll leave us with this. Any piece of advice for young female athletes?
Visualize success. Set goals. My grandchildren are so tired of me saying that. But, you know, if you aim at nothing, you'll hit it every time. And and then work hard. Compete. Every athlete here has to be very competitive mm-hmm. to have had as much success to get here. But that's why they got here, is because they're competitive.
Yes.
And, you know, I kind of used to apologize for being competitive, but, you know, that's just the way I was made. You know, if you roll out cards or a game or something, I'd like to do well in
yes,
it.
Yes.
And just dream big. You got to dream. You got to visualize success. Dream big and then work like a dog at it.
Yeah.
I quote, my daughter will die when I say this probably, but all of my life, said to her and the grandchildren, the quality of your life is directly proportional to your striving for excellence. You may not reach it. You may not reach all your goals, but your life, the quality of your life, is going to be fabulous. And I've had a fabulous quality of life.
Wow, that was a great note to end on. Well, Anne, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me. This was amazing. And I have to say that as of when this podcast comes out tomorrow, you will be in the Tennessee 2024 Athletics Hall of Fame. Congratulations.
Thank you.
We are so excited to honor you and have your legacy cemented here at Tennessee. It's a beautiful thing, and it was amazing getting the chance to talk to you today.
Thank you, Sarah. I enjoyed it very, very much. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of your favorite sports podcast, Everything Orange. As always, be sure to follow us on all of our Vol Sports platforms so you don't miss out on a single update. But before we go, here's a look at everything going on with Tennessee athletics this upcoming week. A reminder that men's golf has their SEC championship going on right now. And tonight, baseball plays Missouri at 7:30 in Lindsey Nelson Stadium. Tomorrow, track competes in its two-day Outdoor Music City Challenge in Nashville. Rowing competes in its two-day Lake Wheeler Invitational in Raleigh. Volleyball has its orange and white scrimmage. Baseball plays game two against the Tigers at 6:30 p.m. And softball plays game one against Alabama in Tuscaloosa at 7 p.m. On Saturday, track competes in the Desert Heat Classic in Arizona. Baseball plays its last game against Missouri at noon. And softball plays game two against the Tide at 7 p.m. Then on Sunday, the Lady Vols play their last game against Alabama at 2 p.m. And lastly, for the week on Tuesday, baseball has its midweek game against Lipscomb at 6 p.m. in Lindsey Nelson Stadium. Well, that's a wrap on Rocky Top. Make sure to tune in next Thursday for another episode of Everything Orange. Bye, y'all.